Washington's Chrysler Plymouth distributor is H.B. Leary, Jr. and Brothers, who now have the beautiful 1940 Plymouth. See the 1940 Plymouth at H.B. Leary, Jr. and Brothers, 1612 U Street, Northwest. 9 o'clock, the correct time. WJSV, Washington.
Does Hollywood have a heart? The answer to that question will be broadcast over the Columbia Broadcasting System every Sunday night at 7:30 o'clock on the Screen Gill Theater. This program returns to the air September 24th. The greatest of Hollywood stars broadcast, but they receive no pay for their work. Instead, the money, $10,000 each week, goes into the fund to build a home for the screen industry's needy. Be sure to tune in every Sunday night.
Tonight, the Columbia Workshop presents the fifth specially commissioned work for the current Workshop Festival, Now It's Summer, a comedy by the young American author and playwright Arthur Kober. Earl McGill is the director. The scene is a high school classroom in elementary physics. Charles Trow has taught physics for over 20 years, and what he says, he has said again and again.
Now, I want the class to observe that I've just made a parallel connection with these two bulbs. Now, watch closely. By unscrewing this one bulb, so, I put the light out. Now, does that affect the power of this other bulb? Yes, Corey, your hand was up first.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't what?
It doesn't affect the power of that there other bulb.
Exactly. It does not affect the power of the other bulb. Now, I want the class to notice the bulbs on the other base. These bulbs are connected in series. Now, observe, please, that when... Sweeney?
Yes, sir.
What are you doing, Sweeney?
Nothing.
Exactly. Quiet. Quiet, please. Sweeney? You're to give me your full and undivided attention. You understand? Do you understand, young man?
Yeah.
Yes, what?
Yes, sir.
That's better. Now, as I was saying, observe the effect as I turn this light out. The other light also goes out. Now, put that down in your books, please. How to tell whether devices are connected in series or in parallel. The test is to turn out one bulb. If all go out, they are connected in series. If one goes out, what's the answer, Sweeney?
The answer?
Very sorry to have to disturb your slumbers. Phillips, you give our sleepy friend the answer.
If one goes out, they're connected in parallel.
Exactly. Now, Sweeney, I want you to read what I've just asked you to put in your notebook.
Huh,
is not what I asked you to write. Quiet. Quiet. Please, boys, quiet. Sweeney, I shall have to ask you to stay in after the rest of the class is dismissed. Minelli?
Yes, sir?
I want you to make tomorrow's homework on the board. Page 630, problems 3, 11, 12, and 14. I don't think that's at all funny, Sweeney.
Oh, gee whiz. Now a guy doesn't sneeze no more.
Pertinence, I won't tolerate it.
Stop!
You will retain your seat. Signal is meant for you. You're all to read the page energy and to define the various types of energy. Now, have you all got that?
Yes, sir.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow whether you have or not. All right. Class dismissed. Winnie, I want you to come forward, please.
Ah, gee whiz, I didn't do that.
You will do as I say. Yes, what is it, Corey?
Are we supposed to do that stuff about power?
Your homework covers that question.
Hey, yes, Benedict.
Yes, Benedict?
You said I should ask you when I could use the Bunsen burner, Mr. Trow.
Will you stop that noise, please? I'm sorry, Benedict. Not today. Some other time. Oh, Corey forgot his textbooks. Will you see that he gets them?
Yes, sir.
Right. Now, Sweeney.
Gee whiz, Mr. Trow, I'm supposed to see Mr. Considine after school. He'll give me holy heck if I don't see him.
Here's a sheet of paper. Make out a note to Mr. Considine saying I detained you, and I'll sign it.
Gee whiz, what did I do anyways? I was just sitting there. I wasn't hurting nobody.
Hurting nobody?
No, sir. I wasn't hurting nobody.
Hurting nobody?
Hurting anybody.
Better.
Ah, gee whiz, why are you always picking on me? What you got against me, anyhow?
Every time I'm in the midst of an experiment or the explanation of some rule, you're either whispering to your neighbor or you're off stargazing somewhere. Now, I can't have discipline in my class if you're going to set a bad example, can I?
But I wasn't whispering, Mr. Trow. Today I was doing nothing.
That's it, Sweeney. You were doing nothing when you were supposed to be listening.
I was listening.
Don't contradict me. You were daydreaming. You had your eyes closed.
That's the way I listen sometimes. No kidding, I
Sweeney,
really...
Sweeney, this has happened too often to be an accident. I'm afraid I shall have to report you to Dr. Curtis. You wouldn't want me to do that, would you?
No, sir.
Well, what's your average mark, Sweeney?
About 70.
70? Do any of your other teachers find fault with you?
No, sir. Nobody else picks on me. You're the only one.
Why does Mr. Considine want to see you?
He's coaching the baseball team. I'm supposed to be in the park
right now.
Keep
your seat, please, please. I'm not letting you go until we get to the bottom of this. Now, what is it, Sweeney? Come on, out with it.
I don't know.
Well, there's no need to be embarrassed. This is just between you and me. Now, speak up.
I got nothing to speak up.
Are my problems too complex?
Huh?
I mean, are they too hard?
They're okay, I guess.
Well, now, perhaps I don't make myself clear. Perhaps if I expressed myself a little more, shall we say, more simply, you'd understand. Now, is that it?
Well, I don't know.
Sweeney, you must know what's bothering you.
I got nothing bothering me.
Last week, it was Turner I had to report. The week before, it was Hellman. Now, I don't want to go to Dr. Curtis again. Sweeney, there's an old adage. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Now, you've often heard of that, haven't you?
I don't know.
Of course you have. Everybody has. Now, there is something obviously wrong with you. I'd like to help you, but that requires your cooperation. In other words, let us say that I'm the doctor and you are the patient, so to speak. Now, in order to effect it... There you go again.
What did I do now?
Even when I try to help you, you won't listen. You were staring out of the window, wearing that sickish grin on your face. Sweeney, I don't know what to do with
you. I was listening, Mr. Trow. You said you was a doctor.
Your constant wool-gathering is becoming a source of extreme irritation. You're really not a bad boy. If only you wouldn't allow your mind to wander off the way it does.
No, sir, no more. Gee, I hope Mr. Considine...
Now, one moment, please, please. I'm not quite through with you.
Oh, gee.
Now, stop your sulking. I assure you, it's no fun for me to stay here after school. But I must do something about you, if only as an example to the other unruly pupils. You don't like physics, do you? Isn't that why you're so restless? Go on, you can tell me. I won't punish you.
Oh, who wants to be an electrician anyhow? What do I care about that electric light and power stuff?
Well, what would you rather do?
Play baseball with the rest of the guys. That's what I was thinking when I was looking out of the window. I was thinking, gee whiz, now it's summer. Look at me, cooped up here while a gang is in the park having fun. I was thinking, boy, it must be nice out there in the park. It's summer now.
But, Sweeney, we can't go about doing whatever we like. It would be a very strange world if we did. There are certain things which have to be done whether we like to do them or not. They make for routine and order. Now, if we were to neglect these duties, we'd have chaos and confusion. There are certain tasks that I have to perform whether I want to or not. I, too, would like to be out in the fresh air. There's also a park a few blocks from the boarding house in which I live. I haven't been there in... Oh, let me see now. Never mind. The fact is that I frequently hear some of my neighbors arranging to go there. There are times when I'm tempted to go along. But do I leave my work? Do I take time off? Do I neglect my duties? The answer, Sweeney, is emphatically no, I do not. Even though it is summer and there is a park nearby. Routine and order, Sweeney, are the great secret of life. Now learn the simple art of self-discipline. For example, make a point of arriving at your classes promptly. Devote all your thought and energy to the subject in hand. Then, when your classes are over, you can relax. Play your baseball in the park. Have your good time. Happy in the knowledge that you've done your... Sweeney, I give up. You're incorrigible.
Well, what's the matter? What did I do now?
Come along, come along. I'll take you to Dr. Curtis. Perhaps he can drill some sense into you.
Gee whiz, I'm always doing something wrong. Even when I sit nice and quiet, that's wrong.
Nothing I say seems to penetrate. Everything goes into one ear and out the very same ear.
Honest, Mr. Trow, I was paying attention.
You were busy. You were busy scribbling away while I was talking. Sweeney, does anything ever stir in that cranium of yours?
Yes, sir.
Really? How surprising. What were you writing?
Oh, it's nothing.
Let me see it.
It's just a plain piece of paper, that's all.
Come on, let me have it. I'm curious to see what you think of, if you think at all, while I'm talking. Well?
It's just some scribbling, Mr. Trow. It ain't got no sense to it.
No, I don't doubt that for a moment. I'm waiting, Sweeney.
Oh, gee.
Open your fist, please. Now, let me see what... What made you write this?
I don't know.
Old Donald Duck. Mr. Trow, Old Donald Duck. Old Donald Duck?
I didn't make it up, Mr. Trow. Honest, I didn't. The rest of the fellas, they all
you
got
You mean
to...
that the other pupils also call me this? Do they, Sweeney? I want to know so I can be, well, prepared, so to speak. Do they?
It's kind of like a nickname. You know, like Red and Shorty and...
Old Donald Duck. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Why do they call me that? Please, tell me. I won't punish you. I promise you I won't.
Well, every time you talk, you always go like this. Now then, quack, 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 so to speak. Exactly. Quack, quack, quack,
That's
quack,
enough.
Quack.
I don't want to hear any more.
Oh, I didn't want to tell you, Mr. Trow, but you asked me. You said you wouldn't...
Yes, I know. All right, Sweeney. I asked you and you told me.
That's what I was scribbling. I was thinking, gee whiz, now it's summer. There's the park and I'm cooped up while old Donald Ducky keeps right on quacking. Quack, quack, quack,
I've
quack, quack.
I've had enough of that. Get out of here. Get out at once before I...
Yes, sir. Gee whiz, all I did was tell you what you asked me.
Stop! Old Donald Duck. Mr. Trow, you are old Donald Duck. Quack, 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 so to speak. Exactly. Quack, quack, quack.
He keeps right on quacking. Quack, 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 quack. Gee whiz. Now it's summer. The gang is in the park having fun. I was thinking, boy, it must be nice out there in the park. It's summer now.
And here's the park only a few blocks from the boarding house where I live. Oh, I haven't been here in... Well, let me see now. Heavens, must be years. I don't remember this part of the park at all. Why, that playground there must be new. And look at those children. Dear me, so many of them. Climbing up that ladder and sliding down and climbing up and... Well, dear me, if only they'd apply themselves to their lessons that way. My, this is a large park. I'd forgotten how large it really is.
Oh!
Oh.
Heaven's sake, mister, why don't you look where you're going?
I beg your pardon. I was so abstracted.
I got the baby carriage
I'm
over.
I'm sorry.
Yes, you are right, my sweeter baby. Did a man hurt my pretty witty soldier boy? Oh, you witty rascal, you. My baby wants his toy. Where's that toy?
This must be it on the ground. Here, let me get it.
Thank you.
You are my sweetie, baby. Here's your Donald Duck.
Well, I wonder where I am. dark is so big, I just can't find my way about. I must have walked a great deal. I think I'll sit down and rest a while. I really ought to be getting home, of course. That classroom papers to do. Routine. Routine and order. Tired, though. Oh, dear, all these benches are taken. Oh, there's a place near that girl over there. I beg your pardon.
Hey. I'm sitting down on my newspaper.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you reserving this place?
Reserving the... What do you think this park is, a theater or something?
Would you mind if I sat here?
Why should I mind? I don't own this joint.
Ah, at last I can sit down and rest. That feels nice. I wonder if this young lady on my right reading the newspaper, I wonder if she's resting too. What have we here on my left? Oh, a young man. Is he resting? Oh, there seems to be someone sitting with him.
Say, Kitty, you sure you're comfy now?
Only put down your arm, just a little bit.
Okay, Cleopatra, queen of the Nile. Your humble slave Stretchy obeys the noble queen. Say, you want to know something, Kitty?
What?
It's too bad you can't see your eyes right now. Boy, some set of peepers, wow.
What's the matter with them?
Nothing's the matter with them. They're 100% perfect, your eyes.
Gee, it's the wonder you can see them. The light here, it's so bad.
Go on, Kitty. Take them out so I can examine them.
Crazy. You know, Stretch, a friend of mine, Shirley's her name, she recommends I should use mascara. What do you think?
I think your friend Shirley ought to have her head examined. She must be touched. Mascara. What do you want to spoil such beautiful set of brown eyes for?
They're not brown, you see? You don't even know the color. They're hazel.
Who says?
Well, look, bend down. See? Hazel.
Hazel, huh? You mean like a nut? Gee, you sweet thing.
Oh, Stretch.
Now it's summer. They're all in the park having fun. I was thinking, boy, it must be nice out there in the park. It's summer now.
Well?
Well, what?
Well, I guess they're brown all right.
I ought to be home, arranging my work. Dear me, I'm way behind now on my duties. My, there really will be chaos and confusion. The secret of life, Sweeney, is routine and order. Routine and order, yes. Look at these two. Kitty and Stretch. They seem to know the secret of life. They're not cooped in. They're out here in the park. They both know it's summer.
Looks like we've got an audience. The old guy's watching us.
Next time, maybe we'd better sell tickets.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just couldn't
help.
Give
me my bag, Stretch.
Yeah, come on, Kitty, before his eyes start popping out.
No, please.
Hey, too bad you didn't bring your candid camera with you.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't. You know, I didn't mean to drive them away, really. I didn't.
Tell her to bother you, Pop.
You know, I couldn't help listening.
You'd get gray hair if you're worried.
I thought they were both very sweet.
Yeah,
and then,
sweet.
Yes, and so young. I'm really sorry I frightened them away.
Look, Pop. What? I wouldn't worry none about those birds if I was you. You get used to things like that around here if you just hang around for an hour or so.
Oh, you seem to know this park.
Know it? I memorized it. Mention any leaf, I'll tell you where it is. What else I gotta do? Sit in my 2x4 and get a nice steam bath when I can sit out here in the open? Look at it. Trees and flowers and lots of nice green grass. I like green for a color.
This is here and has been all these years.
What I'd be doing at home right now is sitting and staring at the walls and thinking, what good am I? Where do I come in anyways? Well, in the park, I don't know. People go past you, some happy, some sad. You start wondering about them. Maybe they got their troubles. Maybe they ain't even got a 2x4 with walls to stare at. Then I don't feel so bad. Now, why should somebody else's troubles pep me up? I don't know why. Still, it does.
Old Donald Duck, Mr. Trout. Quack, 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 quack.
Yep.
Quack.
The man who invented parks ought to get a medal. Don't you think so?
Hmm? Oh, I beg your pardon?
I I was talking about the park.
Oh. would you believe it? This is my first visit here in, well, in almost 20 years.
Oh, from out of town, huh?
No, no. I live only a short distance away. Matter of fact, I moved there so as to be near the park.
You mean you live on... So you saw at the place or what?
No, I've taken it for granted, I guess. You know, like the way you take your neighbors and people around you. You know, when I first moved in, I was in this park almost every day. There was a funny little path yes, I remember now. It was back in the boathouse. I used to walk along it every day, dreaming and planning. There was so much to plan and to dream about as I walked through the park 20 years ago.
Funny, but I was running around a park in those days, too.
You? Well, you must have been a baby.
I was 4 years old. Now, why should I lie? I was 6 years old. Have you ever been in Hardin, Minnesota?
I've never been out of this state.
I come from Hardin, Minnesota. Every Sunday morning, my old lady, she had a romantic nature. She dragged me and the whole family to the Hardin Park to look at the scenery. Me, my brothers and sisters, all seven of us.
Seven?
Yeah, seven.
Oh, what about your father?
Well, he was a janitor. He had to stay home and tend the house. But the rest of us, every Sunday we was marching through the park. The parade of the Poniatowskis.
Yeah,
Poniatowskis. It's a Polish name.
Poniatowski.
Yeah, I'd spell it for you, but what good would it do?
Oh, it's an odd name, isn't it?
Odd? You want to hear my full name? Get ready now. May Allison Poniatowski. How do you like a hand like that? May Allison.
It doesn't sound very Polish.
Just my old lady's romantic nature popping out again. You see, while Pop was cleaning up in the yard and tending to the garbage, the old lady was always off seeing movies. She was simply nuts about movies, especially about her idol, Harold Lockwood. Remember him?
I'm afraid I don't.
Well, the old lady was his fan. The family lived in a dive. This was before I was born. And it was full of two things, mice and Harold Lockwood's pictures. Both all over the place.
Oh, I don't think I'd like that.
Oh, they didn't mind. They was counting on me being a boy. Mom thought if she could see a lot of pictures, maybe I'd be born looking like Harold Lockwood. What do you call that thing? Pre-something?
Prenatal influence.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, having a girl must have been a great disappointment.
Yeah, not with the old lady's romantic nature. What the devil, she figured, so long as I can't be like Harold Lockwood, I might as well be like the dame he played opposite. May Allison, her name.
Oh, I begin to see.
Yeah, with a handle like that, she figured, maybe someday I'd meet a fella like Lockwood. And I don't know. I've been around, I've met a lot of guys, and if any of them was like Mom's Lockwood, all I gotta say is Harold Lockwood was no bargain.
Is your mother still fond of the movies?
Nah, to tell you the truth, I ain't seen her in years. The minute my older brother got a job, she up and runs away with a boarder. Fat little greaseball with a walrus mustache. With Mom's romantic nature, maybe he did look like Harold Lockwood at that. Say, must be kind of late, huh?
Oh, I wonder what time it is.
You've got a match?
Oh.
Well, the correct time is 13 minutes to 10, courtesy Century Easy Credit Plan.
Oh. Is it really that late? Dear me, I...
Well, thanks for sitting here and let me chew your ear off.
Oh, I enjoyed it very much.
I don't get a chance to do much gabbing around here. The dames, they don't seem to like my line of talk. And the fellas, they don't want to talk. They got one motto, action speaks louder than words. So, there you are.
Well, I'll say goodnight. I hope that we'll meet again.
Oh, sure, sure. Anytime you're in the neighborhood, just drop in. Guess I ought to be getting back, too. Yeah, go back to what?
Yes, and go back to what?
Well, look, I got nothing but a 2x4 dump to go to, but you.
I? What have I? A boarding house to go to. Mrs. Bell, the landlady, is probably very worried about me. I've never been out this late before. I'll be home soon. I'll be home, filling the air with chalk dust and classroom smells and my usual complaints, how some horrid little monster annoyed me and how I had to deal firmly with a rascal.
You're a school teacher, huh?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, gee. Oh, excuse me.
What for?
For talking so dopey, calling you Pop. Gee, I should have known right away from the way you talked, so refined-like. Gee, ain't I the sap, though? If you'd only tell me what you was...
Why? What difference does it make?
A school teacher? Why, you must be awful smart, awful brainy, what I mean. Think of it, hundreds and hundreds of kids, and you learning them things, telling... Well, what do you teach?
Physics.
Physics? It's a new one on me, physics. Sounds kind of funny.
Oh, it isn't funny. On the contrary, it's quite serious.
Well, what is it? I mean, arithmetic, that's figures. Geography, that's about foreign countries.
Well, it's quite an involved subject. Physics is the study of... Well, you don't really want to know, do you?
Oh, sure I do. But if it's going to take time, then forget it.
Well, physics is the science which treats of energy and matter and their relation to each other.
Oh, I see.
Do you?
What?
Do you see?
honestly, I don't. What's it all about?
Well, roughly, it's about mechanics. Heat, magnetism, light, electricity.
It's still Greek to me.
And to my pupils, too, I found out. The only thing that keeps them from falling asleep is the classroom bell.
Look, tell me something. With so much knowledge in the world to pick on, how come you grabbed such a broken-down thing like that physics?
Well, I felt that it had a fundamental relationship to life. Heat, light, mechanics, we couldn't exist without them. But perhaps there are more important things. Yes, Sweeney proved that to me some hours ago.
Sweeney?
Today's particular monster. No, it's summer, he said. Who wants to be cooped up in a room, he said, when you can be out there in the park having fun? Well, he was right. He was right. Now that calliope sounds so gay and summery.
That's Pleasure Palace.
Pleasure Palace?
Yeah.
Oh. I wonder if you would... never mind.
What?
No, it's too silly.
I'll tell you, if it's silly, what is it?
Well, you know, I'd like to go there. I'd like to go there now. Will you come with me?
Hey, well, wait a minute. Am I hearing right? You do mean Pleasure Palace, don't you? Hey, look, you're too big a boy to go running away from school.
Yes, I knew it was too silly.
Gee, he really means it. So you know what this is, don't you? A pickup.
Hmm?
Well, not that I ain't been picked up before. Where's my bag?
Do go.
What do I got to lose?
Well, we won't stay very long.
Yeah, so I can get my beauty sleep and be fresh in the morning to go looking for jobs. Don't worry, those jobs still won't be there, whether I'm fresh like a daisy or not. You gonna shoot the works?
The works?
I mean, will we go on the merry-go-round?
Oh, on the Ferris wheel, too, if you like.
And can we try the whip?
Uh-huh, and the barrel of fun.
Don't forget the tunnel of love.
And we'll eat popcorn and apple on the stick.
Yeah, how's about hot dogs and ice cream? Cream?
Why, of course, and we'll drink soda pop and lemonade.
Can you make mine a root beer?
You'll have that, too.
Come on, I'm getting indigestion just thinking about it.
Be nice out there in that park. Why, now it's summer.
You've been listening to the CBS presentation of Now It's Summer, a comedy specially commissioned for the Columbia Workshop Festival by Arthur Kober. Earl McGill directed tonight's performance, and Bernard Herrmann conducted the musical score. The part of Charles Trow was played by Carl Swenson. May Allison Poniatowski by Ann Shepherd, and Sweeney by Jimmy Donnelly. We call your special attention to next week's Columbia Workshop, which will be the final broadcast in the current festival series. It is a revival of the now famous Fall of the City by Archibald MacLeish. It will be produced in Hollywood under the direction of Irving Reese. Burgess Meredith will play the leading role. This program will originate from the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum with a cast of over 500 people to make it one of the most outstanding broadcasts of the year. The time, of course, is 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You may be interested to know that the Fall of the City is one of the dramas that is contained in the book Columbia Workshop Plays, published by Whittlesey House, and now available at your local bookstore. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The following announcement is presented by means of electrical transcription.
For the hot news about the 1940 cars, see your nearest Buick dealer. Then you'll know why everyone's saying,
"Best bets, Buick."
930 WJSB, Washington.
The Columbia Broadcasting System takes pleasure in announcing an evening news program featuring Paul Sullivan, famous news reporter. Mr. Sullivan will give a complete, clear-cut news broadcast every evening except Saturday, starting September 24th. For exact time, see your local newspaper.
All right now, ladies and gentlemen, we turn to the next offering. We ask you to consider what we have here. Experts have appraised it, ladies and gentlemen. It's been called something of interest for every home. Observe, please, the program, the purpose, the intention. Ladies and gentlemen, here is...
Americans at Work, Columbia's program about you and what you do for a living. In the voice you just heard, we tried to give you a suggestion about who our American at Work is tonight. He is...
the auctioneer, ladies and gentlemen. The auctioneer.
Now, perhaps you think, as many people do, that the auctioneer's work is confined to selling odd furniture or offering stocks of merchandise at foreclosure sales. But in reality, the auctioneer sells a great deal more than that. The total yearly sales at auctions run to hundreds of millions of dollars. Fur manufacturers buy 90% of their furs at auction. Carloads of tobacco, bananas, eggs, they all go at auction. Vast tracts of lands, huge buildings. Now tonight, here with us in the studio, we have five auctioneers who stand foremost in their profession and who represent five different specialties in this ancient and honorable calling. They are Mr. John Evans, the veteran livestock auctioneer, whose specialty is horses. A stocky, jovial man who's sitting across the table from us. Mr. William Fitzgerald of the New York Auction Company, a fur auctioneer, an alert young man. I hope that answers your description, Mr. Fitzgerald, does it?
It does.
All right.
He's smiling.
A word from Mr. Day. Mr. Hiram Park of the Park Burnett Galleries, the famous auctioneer of priceless objects of art, a dignified connoisseur type. Mr. Robert M. Zadra, who auctions, of all things, eggs, a young, pleasant man, and Mr. Joseph P. Day, whose name is a byword in the real estate world. Mr. Day, I'm going to call you tall, white-haired, and good-natured. Is that an answer to your description?
I think so.
Now, gentlemen, as you know, everyone loves an auction. Gets a thrill out of the excitement of bidding and the chance for a bargain. And yet, when you think of it, the auction, with all its buyers and sellers, tends to create the really true economic price that our more learned peers discuss within the cloistered walls. But let's go behind the scenes and discuss a few generalities about the work of the auctioneer and the man himself. Are there certain licensing restrictions for an auctioneer? I've got to begin at the very beginning. How about that, Mr. Day, are there?
Yes, sir.
What are they?
The most important thing is, in this state and in most of the states, I believe now, there's no buy-bidding or puffing, as they used to call it, allowed.
You mean bidding up the price?
Bidding up the price. That's a protection for the buyer.
And the auctioneer has to be licensed by the state, is that
right? Licensed by the state and sometimes by the county and the city.
But now, aside from the licensing, what are the personal qualifications for being a good auctioneer? You're an old hand at it, Mr. Evans. What are they?
To be a good auctioneer, it's necessary to be born to it.
It is?
You'll never acquire it if you're not born to it.
How do you think about that, Mr. Park?
Well, I think you must know the property that you're selling.
That's a very good point. I wonder, too, is a good voice a requisite?
Very much so.
How do you feel about that?
I agree with Mr. Park.
Not so much since the amplifier came in.
Well, you've seen the whole time, Mr. Day. All right. How about the knowledge of human nature? Mr. Zadra, what do you think about that? Is that a necessary...
I believe it is, Mr. King. I think that you must know the people that you sell to, that you deal with.
How about you, Mr. Day?
I go along on that.
All right, I think we all go along on that. And now, before we get into discussion of individual problems here, I want to skip around the table just once and ask all of you gentlemen about your
the goods you sell in the matter of prices. I want to find out, to give our radio audience an idea of what's going on the auction block, how much in dollars does a good sale amount to for each one of you, and then how many individual articles are there in such a sale. How about that, Mr. Park?
Well, of course, the sales vary by reason of the outstanding objects that may be in such a sale. For instance, I've managed sales where there were 500, 550 objects that brought as much as $2,300,000. That was for the estate of the late Judge Geary, who was president of the Steel Trust. Then there are other sales that may have that many objects that would only bring from $100,000 to $150,000.
Well, that's a very clear picture of your field. Now, how about you in the livestock world over there, Mr. Evans? You sell livestock. What is a large sale for you in dollars?
A large sale for me in dollars? Well, it's hard to compute it in dollars without having a set of figures. I have sold, the most horses I ever sold in one day was 768. Now, those horses would probably average $140, $50 apiece. You people with pencils can figure it out for yourselves.
All right. How about in the fur business, Mr.
Fitzgerald? I paid that horse auctioneer much more than that average for a couple of good carriage horses.
Well, that's the ordinary sale.
I see, Mr. Day. Thank you very much. But, Mr. Fitzgerald, how about the fur auctioneer's problem? How much in dollars does a good sale amount to?
Well, our sales always run about $1 million to $1.25 million.
And about, roughly, how many skins?
Well, if we exclude an item such as Silver Fox, we'll probably offer approximately 350 to 500,000 skins.
How about real estate, Mr. Day? What's a good sale for you?
The Henry Astor estate, $6 million in one day, and the Commodore Gould, $6.5 million in one afternoon, 2.5 hours.
And that's a restricted set of buildings in each case?
Yes.
I see.
20, well, an average of 20, we'll say.
All right, let's step over here to Mr. Zadra, too. I'd rather move over to him. What's a good sale for you in a day's time?
Well, the eggs don't go up in millions of dollars, but $250,000 in one week, we believe, is a good sale for a young corporation as ours is.
And that's how many eggs?
Well, possibly 10,000 cases, 30 dozens to a case, 360 eggs to a case.
Of course, they're fresh eggs, aren't they?
Oh, you bet. Always, always.
Today, I knew I'd be out of my place.
Okay. <here. laughs>
You gentlemen are all better super salesmen and better talkers, I'm sure, than any radio announcer. But now let's get to the individuals, and I hope you all will feel free to jump in here. I know you will, Mr. Day, and lend a hand when I don't make a point, will you?
You make points all right, young man. You're Irish.
Yes, I am. Mr. Evans, we want to ask you, first of all, about the horse auctioneer's problems. How long have you been in this business?
Well, I began when I was 16 years old, and I'm a good ways from 16 now.
I think he looks like 100.
No, I don't. Well, not quite as old as that, but I've been selling horses here in New York for 40 years.
Well, that's. I understand, too, you sell a lot of livestock. You have sold a lot of livestock.
He sold me two horses, I'll tell you that.
I've sold more horses than any man living.
Well, what other types of livestock have you sold?
I've sold every animal that ever came out of the jungle. I've sold elephants, camels, lions, tigers, hyenas, boa constrictors. And all of those things, the way I come to sell them, I sold out two circuses.
I see.
Sold out the Cole Brothers Show in Corry, Pennsylvania one time, and the Johnny Robbins Show in Indianapolis.
Well, now, you said going back to when you were 16 when you started, how did you get into this auctioneering work?
Well, I was born to it. I come from a family of auctioneers. On my mother's side, they were practically all auctioneers.
He had a good mother, then.
Yeah. I did. I look very much like her as she looked when she was a young woman.
Well, did you just happen to slide into the work? Somebody come along someday and say you're an
auctioneer? Somebody came along one day and wanted to build a sale and put my name on it.
Yes.
And the first thing I ever sold in my life was a grain cradle. I doubt whether you people know what it is.
No, I don't. That's beyond me.
That's the first article I ever sold in my life.
What was it?
The grain cradle. Do you know what it is?
No.
You know what it is?
No.
Well, you know.
No.
If you sell
a grain cradle,
sell eggs and don't know what a grain cradle is?
I'm sorry.
Well, a grain cradle
is 100 years old.
A grain cradle is what they use in the foreign countries to cut grain. The foreigners use them still to cut grain.
A grain cradle.
Yeah.
And then after that, you got into the livestock game. What were the horse auctions like in the old days? Tell us about that.
Well, the horse auctions in the old days were so fast, I used to average about 75 horses an hour all the time, beginning at 10 o'clock and run on till we finished the sale. Those sales would average around 350 to 400 horses each sale.
How many horses do you figure you've sold in all?
I've sold over 1.5 million.
How many horse auctions are there today?
Do you mean throughout the country or here in New York?
Here in New York.
Well, there are only two that are conducted now.
really come down. The horses are disappearing.
The horses are disappearing, although everyone there are more horses in New York today than you think there are. There are still about 8,000 horses in greater New York.
There really are. I didn't
yes.
know that.
There's 16 million in the country.
What's the knack or trick in being a successful auctioneer of horses? I shouldn't say trick, but what's the
Well,
the
it's
knack
necessary, like it is in every other line of auction. It's necessary to know what you're selling and who's going to buy. You've got to form a value of the animal as you see, and if you're a good auctioneer, you'll soon know that. As he comes to you, you've got to know pretty nearly what he'll bring and who'll buy him.
It's a sixth sense, isn't it?
It's a sixth sense. That's what it is.
Well, aside from that, you have to have a gift of gab, don't you?
Well, it's necessary to talk fast to sell as fast as I do.
I understand you sell about 75 horses an hour, you can.
That's what I used to average. Well, I've often sold over 100 in an hour.
Well, Mr. Evans, you are, in my opinion, well-gifted along those lines of the gift of gab and, of course, understanding your business. But have you ever thought of being a radio announcer?
Well, I might have thought of it, but since I see it tonight, I don't think I will.
You've got me there, I bow out. No, but before I do bow out, I do want to ask you this. Have you ever sold any horses for foreign countries, huge lots of them?
At the end of the war, I sold all of the horses that were in this country belonging to the British, the French, and the Italian government.
What's that song? Horses, horses, horses.
To what degree do you think the horse is being replaced by the auto?
Well, I have said several times that years ago a horse used to be afraid of an automobile, but after a while it'll be so if a horse meets another horse, you'll shy away from him and he'll be so scared.
Thank you, Mr. Evans.
You don't know what he is.
Thank you very much. I think you've given us a very clear picture. Now I want to ask Mr. Fitzgerald, William Fitzgerald, who handles the fur auctions. In the fur auctions...
How does an Irishman come to sell furs? That's what I want to
know. How does an Irishman come to sell furs?
I wouldn't dare make it public.
In the fur auctions, where do the furs come from? Where do you get them?
Well, we get them from all parts of the world.
And they're on consignment?
They're sent to us on a consignment basis.
And then how are the furs handled? Are they tagged or put in lots?
They're graded and put into various lots and given a lot number. And thus cataloged.
When the auction gets underway, you're down here in your fur auction, how is the bidding carried on? How do they make the bids?
Well, it's very secretive. One buyer doesn't wish another buyer to know when he's bidding, so he either blinks his eye or wiggles his ear or lifts his finger.
And you have to know all those individual signals for each buyer.
Oh, yes.
I think that's pretty general in our discussions this evening about those secretive bids among the auctioneers that are here, at least from what we said. How often are your fur auctions held?
Well, we hold 4 general sales a year and 5 special silver fox and mink sales during the year.
And that applies to the whole trade?
That applies to the whole trade.
And supplies my lady with everything that she wears in the fur line?
My lady controls the fur line.
She does?
Absolutely.
Well, what is she choosing this year as being very popular?
Well, she still thinks silver fox is very good.
How about red
she's
fox?
Also kind of taking a liking to red fox and mink and beaver. And she's also very fond of muskrats, as she always has been.
I see. How many lots are sold on the average in an hour in your fur auction?
Well, our auctions depend a lot on speed, so we try to sell from 180 to 200 lots an hour.
About yourself now a minute. On what basis is the fur auctioneer paid? Do you have a salary or do you...
Oh, we work on... The fur auctioneer works on a salary.
On a salary. Roughly, what is that salary, roughly?
Well, the fur auctioneer earns from $5,000 to $10,000 a year.
Oh, that's a very good salary. Have you ever sold any furs
to... I think
to...
the real estate doesn't have to take hold of that fur business and show them how to make money.
Why, do you make more in real estate?
A little.
I'll get around to you in a minute. Have you ever sold any furs to celebrities?
Well, several years ago, our firm sold silver foxes that were made into capes for the now Duchess of Windsor.
Really? That's very interesting. That goes back into our public history, I guess.
Well, not too far back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fitzgerald, and for your story of the fur auction and the fur auctioneer. I want to jump over now to the egg auction. I'm jumping over there enough. I've broken about a dozen crates of the egg. Mr. Robert M. Zadra, the auctioneer for the New York Egg Auction Company. Will you tell us, Mr. Zadra, when are the egg auctions held?
Well, we hold our egg auction daily, Monday to Friday inclusive, and we...
In the morning?
At 12:15 every day.
I see. And how long does it run each session?
Well, depending on the volume offered, the average is about an hour and 15 minutes.
Well, just about how many eggs are sold there every day?
Well, on an average of about 1,800 to 2,000 cases daily.
At 30 dozen?
That's 30 dozens to the case, 360 eggs to the case. All fresh eggs, Mr. Day.
It's about 700,000 eggs.
That's right.
That'd make quite an omelet, Mr. Zatter.
Yes, sure would.
Now, how do you get your bids in the egg auction?
Well, the bids, a lot of them are trick signals. A lot of the customer don't care to let the other one know when they do the bidding. Very often, we apply a number to the customer. And instead of mentioning the customer's name at the time of the purchase, why, we mention his number.
And only you know the number.
And only the firm or the clerk that takes the number down knows who the customer is that does the buying due to the fact that his bidding is secretive.
Well, we've heard all about these trick signals of touching the necktie or winking the eye. Is there anything special down there that you have in
your... Well, we have one particular customer that goes into the candling booth, which is covered by curtains, and every time he cares to make a bid, he just sticks his head out of a candling booth, and that's the sign that he's bidding.
Well, that's quite a picture. I want to ask you, too, you mentioned something about telephone bids, and we were speaking before the program. What's that all about? What are telephone bids?
Well, we have out-of-town customers. Where they cannot attend the auction, so naturally, we have several salesmen on a stand which telephones, and these customers will call in, ask the salesman the way the bidding is going in certain lot or brand which they might be interested, and they authorize the salesman to represent them in the bidding, and very often they buy large quantities of eggs in that manner.
They keep in constant touch with the auction, then, I take it?
Yes, they do. They receive a catalog of our offerings every morning in their mail.
Well, how is the egg market at present time? How's that going?
Well, at the very present time, the market is very dull.
It is.
Yes.
I don't quite understand that. I can't see how people would stop eating eggs one day and eat them again the next day.
Well, the price factor is predominant as far as the public. I mean, when eggs go up to 51, 53 cents a dozen for the best eggs, why, people will stop eating eggs and probably go to pork and beans or something like that.
And then the price comes back down again.
That's right.
They're not buying.
That's right.
I suppose that the buyers there at your egg auction represent the tastes of your community around, don't they, and their localities?
Yes.
And you get an idea of what the people like.
That's right.
Brown eggs or white eggs?
Well, there's not much difference in the quality of brown eggs or white eggs. Here in New York, of course, is largely a white egg market. In other words, the white egg would bring more money here in New York than the brown egg, whereas in Boston, it's just the opposite. They prefer to have the brown eggs up there rather than the whites. But there's no difference in quality.
Same way in Philadelphia. Philadelphia's a brown egg.
That's so.
And now about your income. I don't want to get personal here, but roughly, what does the egg auctioneer average in a year?
You mean as far as salary?
Yes.
Well,
And you work on commissions?
No. We work on straight salary.
You do work.
We work on straight salary, and of course, I don't really like to say what I'm being paid because my employer might be listening, and he may be thinking that I'm not getting enough.
Well, I'm going to ask you a very personal question here, Mr. Zadra. You sell all these eggs, but do you eat them?
I'm very, very sorry to say that the only time I eat eggs is on a Sunday morning, and that's due to the fact that I've got to get up too early to get to work in time, and I have to commute. Naturally, I haven't got the time to eat the eggs, but I do have them every Sunday, and I do love them.
How many do you eat on a Sunday morning?
Oh, about four.
About four? Well, that's very good. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Zadra, and I hope we didn't go too far behind the scenes into your private life, but I think you did present a very clear picture.
Thank you, Mr. King.
Of the egg situation and the egg auctions. And now we come to Mr. Hiram H. Park, the president of the Park Burnett Galleries, the auctioneers of artistic and literary property. Mr. Park, how long have you been in the business?
42 years.
42 years. You've probably seen a great deal of changes. How did you happen to get into auctioneering of artistic properties?
Well, I first went into the auction business as a clerk. And shortly after, probably 6 or 8 months after going in as a clerk, I was called upon by my employer to relieve him on the stand. He was the auctioneer at that time, and his throat had some affection of his throat at the time, and he asked me to relieve him. And from then on, I've been an auctioneer.
I see. The main personal...
I'll say is a swell one.
Well, Mr. Day, I know you're a mutual admiration society here, Mr. Park, as you said yourself a little while ago. And I know you're going to help me with the interview here. You just stay right with us, will you? Because I'm going to miss a few questions, I'm sure. The main...
No, you're too.
The main personal requisite in your work is, of course, knowledge of the art goods that you handle, isn't it?
That is true.
That's the first and foremost thing, wasn't it?
First and most important thing.
And what's next? What's the next requisite?
Well, getting the proper goods to sell and getting the buyers for those goods, knowing how to reach the buyers.
A knowledge of personal psychology, wouldn't
that say? That's one of the main essentials of the auction business, the art business especially, art and literary.
Speaking of your business, what famous and outstanding art object have you sold?
Well, I've sold probably some of the most famous sales of art objects that have been sold in this country. In fact, the most outstanding sale was the Great Gary sale back in 1928, which realized over $2,290,000.
What was in that sale? What articles?
Well, the highest price picture in that particular sale was the Gainsborough's masterpiece of the harvest wagon, which realized at that sale $360,000.
Hmm. What else was sold there of importance and note?
Also in the same sale, there was a small bust, a marble bust by the great sculptor Houdin.
How much did that bring?
That brought $245,000. That was a bust of his daughter, Sabine.
I see. How about your sales of old masters, for instance? You ever had any outstanding ones there that you can recall?
Yes, we had the great Stillman sale in 1927, in which 37 paintings at that time brought $716,000. And the main picture there and the highest price ever realized for a Rembrandt painting was at that particular sale. And it was the total for the sale was $716,000, of which this one picture brought $270,000.
A Rembrandt. What picture was that?
That was a painting by Rembrandt of his son Titus.
Mm-hmm.
And it realized, I say, $270,000 and sold to the great house of Devine Brothers, Lord Devine, who passed away recently.
I wonder whether you've ever encountered the case of a very small audience resulting in a poor sale or anything of that sort.
Yes, I've had large, very large audiences and very small ones.
Inclemencies of weather, I imagine, affect that.
I recall back in about 1920, on Washington's birthday in 1920, we had a blizzard. And we were selling at that time a collection of Washingtonian material. In other words, objects that were mostly owned by Washington or
his descendants.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the sale was being conducted for one of the Washington family, one of his descendants. And we had this very stormy and snowy day.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't expect to have much of an audience. And Mr. Washington, Lanier Washington, wanted the sale postponed. We told him we thought that we'd have a crowd that day, but there wasn't much of a crowd. But the sale turned out to be very successful.
How was that?
And there were two very good and very liberal bidders at that particular sale. One of them was George D. Smith, one of the great book collectors and book salesmen of his day. And the other was Mr. William Randolph Hearst. And the two of them made that sale for us.
I see.
And it proved to be very successful.
Well, what was the largest audience? Skipping over to the other side, the largest audience that
you ever saw? That was in the Gary sale, which I had the pleasure of conducting at the Hotel Plaza on April 28, 1928. And the ballroom at that time, the seating capacity of the ballroom at that time was 1,800. But there were more than 3,600 people in the ballroom had passed through the doors.
Now, imagine you could hardly get up in the stand.
It was the sale was scheduled for 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 9 o'clock before I could get to the rostrum.
And it was a big success.
And started the sale. And the sale was a big success. That evening sale run about $1,400,000.
Well, now, I know we're speaking in big terms, and we're speaking of people who buy, big money terms, I mean, of course, people who buy art objects. Have you ever encountered cases of unlimited counterbidding on the same article?
Yes, I once had an instance in Philadelphia where I was selling a sale for one of the very wealthy families there in Philadelphia, and one of the most prominent citizens at that time was executor for the this particular estate. And just on the eve of the sale, he was called to Brussels and had left me an unlimited bid on a pair of pictures. And the sale came off within a few days, and I was selling these particular pictures, and I noticed that they had run up to considerably more than we thought they were valued at. And the only two that seemed to be bidding at that time was myself as auctioneer and one of my assistants. I called to him and asked him what was... I couldn't ask him his bid exactly, but I asked whether he had had some sort of an unlimited bid left with him, and he said that he had had, that he had. And I, knowing that I had this unlimited bid from the executor or his representative, I merely stopped the sale of those two pictures, withdrew them from the sale until I could get the two bidders together.
And settle it that way.
And it was settled in that way, and they were divided. One taking the female portrait and the other the male portrait.
I see. Well, thank you very much. You've given us a wonderful story there.
You split a family, didn't you?
Indeed.
Auctioneer of artistic properties, Mr. Parks. Now I'm going to turn around here to Mr. Joseph P. Day, the auctioneer of real estate, who's all set and ready to go. Mr. Day, you've been very quiet. But your fame as an auctioneer runs right along with our other guests this evening, and you're certainly one of the super salesmen of the day. You've never by any chance sold the Brooklyn Bridge, have you?
No, but I sold the Sixth Avenue elevators.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Tell us about it. You sold the Sixth Avenue elevator?
Yes.
Tell me all about that.
That's a short story. Sold it. After they bought it, they found out that there was cement in the pillars, and so they lost money on it. But that wasn't the fault of the auctioneer or anybody else. Nobody knew about it.
How does selling real estate differ from the methods of these other gentlemen?
Well, it's the principles, I think, are the same in all. It's sort of action. It's first attention, and then desire,
mm-hmm.
and then finally it leads up to getting
the actual sale.
Yes, getting the sale itself.
Well, now, what real estate have you auctioned at the highest price? What big package have you sold? What's your biggest package?
The Henry Astor Estate.
How much did that go for?
$6 million.
Oh, my goodness.
$6 million.
$6 million.
How much the Commodore Gould Estate went for $6.5 million, and the James Gordon Bennett Estate, the owner of the late New York Herald before it was taken into the Herald Tribune.
Yes.
That was lots up in the Bronx, and that sold up in Washington Heights, and that sold for $1,700,000 in the afternoon, and the biggest buyer was this Dr. Paterno.
You've had many millions of dollars come across the auction box. How much real estate have you sold at auction, do you imagine, in the course of your work as an auctioneer?
About $1 billion worth.
About $1 billion?
Mm-hmm.
Beginning with a B.
Billion. Billion.
Why is real estate often auctioned off instead of being sold off at a set price? I don't understand that.
Why, it's the reason that is estates where there's heirs and children and scattered heirs, and it's sold then to the order, sold by the highest bidder.
To settle financially the estate.
There's a law in many states that there's no buy bidding.
No.
In New York State, there's no buy bidding permitted.
What do you mean by buy bidding?
Why, there's nobody can go in and
bid it up?
Boost up the sale. No,
it must be
bona fide.
I suppose
that's the protection.
I suppose psychology plays a big part in your auctioneering, doesn't it?
It does.
Do you have any reminiscences on that subject of psychology?
Well, now we're talking about this arms restriction.
Yes.
Sal Bloom.
Yes.
I sold him a piece of property one afternoon for $340,000.
You really did? Tell us about that.
Well, he didn't. He thought his bid was only $335,000, and I said, Sal, you've got to take it. It's $340,000. That's what I took your bid at. And he came back to our... He went out a little bit angry, and he came back 2 hours out, and he said, Joe, is that still open for me? I said, it certainly is. And I expect you to take it. Or at least I want to take it. I've just sold the contract for $40,000 profit. I gave him the property at his bid. At the bid I said.
What's your hobby, Mr. Day?
Well, one of my hobbies is buying Gertie's prayer rugs at auction from that young man Park over there, or the Park
Mr. Park, is he a good judge of values?
Well, I think his judgment's pretty good on those things.
I see. Well, thank you very much. I want to thank you, Mr. Day, and you, Mr. Park. And as they say at an auction sale, all done. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening
to... No, not all done.
Sold. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Americans at Work, the program about you and what you do for a living, presented each week by the CBS Department of Education. Previous Americans at Work scripts, complete with directional cues, have been printed in attractive pamphlet form. Single copies may be obtained for 10 cents each, or for $1, you may secure a set of 13 different scripts. Just send your order to Americans at Work, CBS, New York. Tonight's program was directed by Brewster Morgan. The Workers' Education Bureau of America collaborates on research for the entire series. Next Thursday evening, Americans at Work will be heard from 10:30 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. John Reed King speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
...10 p.m. BULOVA, Bulova Watch Time. Here's a distinguished timepiece. The 21-jewel Bulova President in the charm and color of natural gold. Curved, streamlined, an exceptional value. WJSV, Washington.